Meg did not order me to shut up or to jump off the terrace, so I recounted for Piper what I'd seen in McCaffrey's memories. When I was done, Piper hopped down from the railing. She approached Meg, and before I could say, "Watch out, she bites harder than a wild squirrel," Piper wrapped her arms around the younger girl. "I'm so sorry." Piper kissed the top of her head. I waited nervously for Meg's golden scimitars to flash into her hands. Instead, after a moment of petrified surprise, Meg melted into Piper's hug. They stayed like that for a long time. Meg quivering, Piper holding her as if she were the demigod comforter-in-chief, her own troubles irrelevant next to Meg's. Finally, with a sniffle slash hiccup, Meg pulled away, wiping her nose. "Thanks." Piper looked at me. "How long has Caligula been messing with demigods' lives?" "Several thousand years," I said. "He and the other two emperors did not go back through the doors of death. They never really left the world of the living. They are basically minor gods. They've had millennia to build their secret empire, triumvirate holdings." "So why us?" Piper said. "Why now?" "In your case," I said, "I can only guess Caligula wants you out of the way. If you are distracted by your father's problems, you are no threat, especially if you're in Oklahoma, far from Caligula's territory. As for Meg and her dad, I don't know. He was involved in some sort of work Caligula found threatening. Something that would have helped the dryads," Grover added. "It had to be, based on where he was working. Those greenhouses. Caligula ruined a man of nature." Grover sounded as angry as I'd ever heard him. I doubted there was higher praise a satyr could give a human than calling him a man of nature. Piper studied the waves on the horizon. "You think it's all connected. Caligula is working up to something, pushing out anyone who threatens him, starting this burning maze, destroying the nature spirits, and imprisoning the Oracle of Erythria," I said, "as a trap for me." "But what does he want?" Grover demanded. "What's his endgame?" Those were excellent questions. With Caligula, however, you almost never wanted the answers. They would make you cry. "I'd like to ask the Sibyl," I said. "If anyone here knows how we might find her." Piper pressed her lips together. "Ah, that's why you're here." She looked at Meg, then at the gas grill, perhaps trying to decide what would be more dangerous, going on a quest with us, or remaining here with the bored child of Demeter. "Let me get my weapons," Piper said. "We'll go for a ride." Chapter 14. Bedrosian man, runs as fast as yoga pants. "Don't judge," Piper warned as she reemerged from her room. "I would not have dreamed of it." Piper McLean looked fashionably ready for combat in her bright white Converses, distressed skinny jeans, leather belts, and orange camp tee. Braided down one side of her hair was a bright blue feather. A harpy feather, if I wasn't mistaken. Strapped to her belt was a triangular bladed dagger, like the kind Greek women used to wear. A Perizonium. Hecuba, future queen of Troy, sported one back when we were dating. It was mostly ceremonial, as I recalled, but very sharp. Hecuba had a bit of a temper. Hanging from the other side of Piper's belt, I guess this was the reason she felt self-conscious. Holstered to her thigh was a miniature quiver stocked with foot-long projectiles, their fletching made from fluffy thistles. Slung across her shoulder along with a backpack was a 4-foot tube of river cane.
"A blowgun!" I cried. "I love blowguns."
Not that I was an expert, mind you, but the blowgun was a missile weapon. Elegant, difficult to master, and very sneaky. How could I not love it?
Meg scratched her neck.
"Are blowguns greeky?"
Piper laughed. "No, they're not greeky, but they are Cherokee-y. My grandpa Tom made this one for me a long time ago. He was always trying to get me to practice." Grover's goatee twitched, as if trying to free itself from his chin Houdini style. "Blowguns are really difficult to use. My Uncle Ferdinand had one. How good are you?"
"Not the best," Piper admitted. "Nowhere near as good as my cousin in Tahlequah. She's a tribal champion. But I've been practicing. Last time Jason and I were in the maze..." She patted her quiver. "These came in handy. You'll see."
Grover managed to contain his excitement. I understood his concern. In a novice's hands, a blowgun was more dangerous to allies than to enemies.
"And the dagger?" Grover asked. "Is that really..."
"Catoptris," Piper said proudly.
"Belonged to Helen of Troy." I yelped.
"You have Helen of Troy's dagger. Where did you find it?"
Piper shrugged.
"In a shed at camp."
I felt like pulling out my hair. I remembered the day Helen had received that dagger as a wedding present. Such a gorgeous blade, held by the most beautiful woman ever to walk the earth. No offense to the billions of other women out there who are also quite enchanting. I love you all. And Piper had found this historically significant, well-crafted, powerful weapon in a shed. Alas, time makes bric-a-brac of everything, no matter how important. I wondered if such a fate awaited me. In 1,000 years, somebody might find me in a tool shed and say, "Oh, look, Apollo, god of poetry. Maybe I can polish him up and use him." "Does the blade still show visions?" I asked.
"You know about that, huh?"
Piper shook her head.
"The vision stopped last summer. That wouldn't have anything to do with you getting kicked out of Olympus, would it, Mr. God of Prophecy?"
Meg sniffed.
"Most things are his fault."
"Hey," I said. Moving right along. Piper, where exactly are you taking us?
If all your cars have been repossessed, I'm afraid we're stuck with Coach Hedge's Pinto."
Piper smirked. "I think we can do better than that. Follow me."
She led us to the driveway, where Mr. McLean had resumed his duties as a dazed wanderer. He meandered around the drive, head bowed as if he were looking for a dropped coin. His hair stuck up in ragged rows where his fingers had raked through it. On the tailgate of a nearby truck, the movers were taking their lunch break, casually eating off china plates that had no doubt been in the McLean's kitchen not long before. Mr. McLean looked up at Piper. He seemed unconcerned by her knife and blowgun.
"Going out?"
"Just for a while."
Piper kissed her father on the cheek.
"I'll be back tonight. Don't let them take the sleeping bags, okay? You and I can camp out on the terrace. It'll be fun."
"All right." He patted her arm absently. "Good luck studying."
Piper said.
"Studying."
You have to love the mist. You can stroll out of your house heavily armed, in the company of a satyr, a demigod, and a flabby former Olympian, and thanks to the mist's perception-bending magic, your mortal father assumes you're going to a study group.
"That's right, Dad. We need to go over some math problems that involve the trajectory of blowgun darts against moving targets."
Piper led us across the street to the nearest neighbor's house, a Frankenstein's mansion of Tuscan tiles, modern windows, and Victorian gables that screamed,
"I have too much money and not enough taste! Help!"
In the wraparound driveway, a heavyset man in athleisure wear was just getting out of his white Cadillac Escalade.
"Mr. Bedrosian," Piper called.
The man jumped, facing Piper with a look of terror. Despite his workout shirt, his ill-advised yoga pants, and his flashy running shoes, he looked like he'd been more leisurely than athletic. He was neither sweaty nor out of breath. His thinning hair made a perfect brushstroke of black grease across his scalp. When he frowned, his features gravitated toward the center of his face, as if circling the twin black holes of his nostrils.
"Piper!" he stammered. "What do you..."
"I would love to borrow the Escalade, thank you," Piper beamed.
Actually, this isn't..."
"This isn't a problem?" Piper supplied. "And you'd be delighted to lend it to me for the day? Fantastic."
Bedrosian's face convulsed. He forced out the words,
"Yes, of course."
"Keys, please?"
Mr. Bedrosian tossed her the fob, then ran into his house as fast as his tight-fitting yoga pants would allow. Meg whistled under her breath.
"That was cool."
"What was that?" Grover asked.
"That," I said, "was charm speaking." I reappraised Piper McLean, not sure if I should be impressed or if I should run after Mr. Bedrosian in a panic. "A rare gift among Aphrodite's children. Do you borrow Mr. Bedrosian's car a lot?" Piper shrugged. "He's been an awful neighbor. He also has a dozen other cars. Believe me, we're not causing him any hardship. Besides, I usually bring back what I borrow. Usually. Shall we go? Apollo, you can drive." "But..." She smiled that sweetly scary, "I could make you do it" smile.
"I'll drive," I said.
We took the scenic coastal road south in the Bedrosian mobile. Since the Escalade was only slightly smaller than Hephaestus's fire-breathing Hydra tank, I had to be careful to avoid sideswiping motorcycles, mailboxes, small children on tricycles, and other annoying obstacles. "Are we going to pick up Jason?" I asked. Next to me in the passenger seat, Piper loaded a dart into her blowgun.
"No need. Besides, he's in school."
"You're not."
"I'm moving, remember? As of next Monday, I'm enrolled at Tahlequah High."
She raised her blowgun like a champagne glass.
"Go Tigers."
Her words sounded strangely unironic. Again, I wondered how she could be so resigned to her fate, so ready to let Caligula expel her and her father from the life they had built here. But since she had a loaded weapon in her hand, I didn't challenge her. Meg's head popped up between our seats.
"We won't need your ex-boyfriend?"
I swerved and almost ran over someone's grandmother.
"Meg,"
I chided.
"Sit back and buckle up, please."
"Grover?" I glanced in the rearview mirror and saw the satyr chewing on a strip of gray fabric.
"Grover, stop eating your seatbelt.
You're setting a bad example." He spat out the strap.
"Sorry."
Piper ruffled Meg's hair, then playfully pushed her into the back seat.
"To answer your question, no. We'll be fine without Jason.
I can show you the way into the maze. It was my dream, after all. This entrance is the one the Emperor uses, so it should be the straightest shot to the center, where he's keeping your Sybil." "And when you went inside before," I said,
"what happened?"
Piper shrugged.
"The usual labyrinth stuff. Traps, changing corridors. Also some strange creatures. Guards? Hard to describe. And fire. Lots of that."
I remembered my vision of Hierophily, raising her chained arms in the room of lava, apologizing to someone who wasn't me.
"You didn't actually find the Oracle?" I asked.
Piper was silent for half a block. gazing at flashes of ocean vista between houses.
I didn't. But there was a short time when we got separated, Jason and me. Now, I'm wondering if he told me everything that happened to him. I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Grover refastened his mangled seatbelt.
Why would he lie?
That, Piper said, is a very good question, and a good reason to go back there without him. To see for myself. I had a sense that Piper was holding back quite a bit herself. Doubts, guesses, personal feelings. Maybe what had happened to her in the labyrinth.
Hooray! I thought. Nothing spices up a dangerous quest like personal drama between formerly romantically involved heroes who may or may not be telling each other and me the whole truth.
Piper directed me into downtown Los Angeles. I considered this a bad sign. Downtown Los Angeles had always struck me as an oxymoron, like hot ice cream or military intelligence. Yes, Ares, that was an insult. Los Angeles was all about sprawl and suburbs. It wasn't meant to have a downtown, any more than pizza was meant to have mango chunks. Oh, sure, here and there, among the dull gray government buildings and closed-up storefronts, parts of downtown had been revitalized. As we zigzagged through the surface streets, I spotted plenty of new condos, hip stores, and swanky hotels. But to me, all those efforts seemed about as effective as putting makeup on a Roman legionnaire. And believe me, I'd tried. We pulled over near Grand Park, which was neither grand nor much of a park. Across the street rose an 8-story honeycomb of concrete and glass. I seem to recall going there once, decades before, to register my divorce from Greta Garbo. Or was it Liz Taylor? I couldn't recall.
The Hall of Records? I asked.
Yeah, Piper said. But we're not going inside. Just park in the 15-minute loading zone over there. Grover leaned forward.
What if we're not back in 15 minutes?
Piper smiled. Then I'm sure the towing company will take good care of Mr. Bedrosian's Escalade. Once on foot, we followed Piper to the side of the government complex, where she put her finger to her lips for quiet, then motioned for us to peek around the corner. Running the length of the block was a 20-foot-high concrete wall, punctuated by unremarkable metal doors that I assumed were service entrances. In front of one of those doors, about halfway down the block, stood a strange-looking guard. Despite the warm day, he wore a black suit and tie. He was squat and burly, with unusually large hands. Wrapped around his head was something I couldn't quite figure out, like an extra-large Arabic keffiyeh made of white fuzzy terry cloth, which draped across his shoulders and hung halfway down his back. That alone might not have been so strange. He could have been a private security guard working for some Saudi oil tycoon. But why was he standing in an alley next to a nondescript metal door? And why was his face entirely covered in white fur? Fur that exactly matched his headdress. Grover sniffed the air, then pulled us back around the corner.
That guy isn't human, he whispered. Give the satyr a prize, Piper whispered back.
Though I wasn't sure why we were being so quiet. We were half a block away, and there was plenty of street noise.
What is he? Meg asked.
Piper checked the dart in her blowgun.
That's a good question. But they can be real trouble if you don't take them by surprise.
They? I asked.
Yeah, Piper frowned. Last time there were two, and they had black fur. Not sure how this one is different, but that door is the entrance to the maze, so we need to take him out. Should I use my swords? Meg asked. Only if I miss.
Piper took a few deep breaths.
Ready?
I didn't imagine she would accept no as an answer, so I nodded along with Grover and Meg. Piper stepped out, raised her blowgun, and fired. It was a 50-foot shot, at the edge of what I consider practical blowgun range. But Piper hit her target. The dart pierced the man's left trouser leg. The guard looked down at the strange new accoutrement protruding from his thigh. The shaft's fletching matched his white fur perfectly. "Oh, great," I thought. "We just made him angry." Meg summoned her golden swords. Grover fumbled for his reed pipes. I prepared to run away screaming. "Wait," Piper said. The guard listed sideways, as if the whole city were tilting to starboard, then passed out cold on the sidewalk. I raised my eyebrows. "Poison?"
"Grandpa Tom's special recipe," Piper said.
"Now come on. I'll show you what's really weird about Fuzzface."
Chapter 15. Grover leaves early. Grover is a smart satyr. Lester, not so much.
"What is he?"
Meg asked again.
"He's fun."
Fun would not have been my adjective of choice. The guard lay sprawled on his back, his lips foaming, his half-lidded eyes twitching in a semi-conscious state. Each of his hands had 8 fingers. That explained why they'd look so large from a distance. Judging from the width of his black leather shoes, I guessed he had 8 toes as well. He seemed young, no more than a teenager in human terms. But, except for his forehead and cheeks, his whole face was covered in fine white fur that resembled the chest hair of a terrier. The real conversation piece was his ears. What I had mistaken for a headdress had come unfurled, revealing 2 floppy ovals of cartilage, shaped like human ears, but each the size of a beach towel. Which told me immediately that the poor boy's middle school nickname would have been Dumbo. His ear canals were wide enough to catch baseballs, and stuffed with so much hair that Piper could have used it to fletch an entire quiver full of darts. "Big ears," I said.
"Duh," said Meg.
"No, I mean this must be one of the big ears that Macro spoke of." Grover took a step back. "The creatures Caligula is using for his personal guard? Do they have to be so scary looking?" I walked a circle around the young humanoid. "Think how keen his hearing must be, and imagine all the guitar chords he could play with those hands. How have I never seen this species before? They would make the world's best musicians."
"Hmm," Piper said. "I don't know about music, but they fight like you wouldn't believe. 2 of them almost killed Jason and me, and we fought a lot of different monsters."
I saw no weapons on the guard, but I could believe he was a tough fighter. Those 8-fingered fists could have done some damage. Still, it seemed a waste to train these creatures for war.
"Unbelievable," I murmured.
"After 4,000 years, I'm still discovering new things."
"Like how dumb you are," Meg volunteered.
"No."
"So you already knew that?"
"Guys," Grover interrupted, "what do we do with big ears?"
"Kill him,"
Meg said. I frowned at her.
"What happened to he's fun? What happened to everything alive deserves a chance to grow?"
"He works for the emperors," she said. "He's a monster. He'll just dust back to Tartarus, right?" Meg looked at Piper for confirmation, but she was busy scanning the street.
"Still seems odd there's only 1 guard," Piper mused. "And why is he so young?"
"After we broke in once already, you'd think they'd put more guards on duty. Unless..." She didn't finish the thought, but I heard it loud and clear. "Unless they want us to come in." I studied the guard's face, which was still twitching from the effects of the poison.
Why did I have to think of his face as the fuzzy underside of a dog? It made killing him difficult.
Piper, what does your poison do, exactly?
She knelt and pulled out the dart.
Judging from how it worked on the other Big Ears, it will paralyze him for a long while, but won't kill him. It's diluted coral snake venom with a few special herbal ingredients.
Remind me never to drink your herbal tea, Grover muttered.
Piper smirked. We can just leave Big Ears. Doesn't seem right to dust him to Tartarus.
Hmm.
Meg looked unconvinced. But she flicked her twin blades, instantly snapping them back into golden rings. Piper walked to the metal door. She pulled it open, revealing a rusty freight elevator with a single control lever and no gate.
Okay. Just so we're clear, Piper said. I'll show you where Jason and I entered the maze. But I'm not doing the stereotypical Native American tracker thing. I don't know tracking. I'm not your guide.
We all readily agreed, as one does when delivered an ultimatum by a friend with strong opinions and poison darts.
Also, she continued, if any of you find the need for spiritual guidance on this quest, I am not here to provide that service. I'm not going to dispense bits of ancient Cherokee wisdom.
Very well, I said. Though as a former prophecy god, I enjoy bits of spiritual wisdom.
Then you'll have to ask the satyr, Piper said.
Grover cleared his throat. Recycling is good karma?
There you go, Piper said. Everybody good? All aboard?
The interior of the elevator was poorly lit and smelled of sulfur. I recalled that Hades had an elevator in Los Angeles that led to the underworld. I hoped Piper hadn't gotten her quests mixed up.
Are you sure this thing goes to the Burning Maze? I asked, because I didn't bring any rawhide chews for Cerberus.
Grover whimpered.
You had to mention Cerberus. That's bad karma.
Piper threw the switch. The elevator rattled and began to sink at the same speed as my spirits.
This first part is all mortal, Piper assured us. Downtown Los Angeles is riddled with abandoned subway tunnels, air raid shelters, sewer lines.
All my favorite things, Grover murmured.
I don't really know the history, Piper said. But Jason told me some of the tunnels were used by smugglers and partiers during Prohibition.
Now you get taggers, runaways, homeless folks, monsters, government employees.
Meg's mouth twitched.
Government employees?
It's true, Piper said. Some of the city workers use the tunnels to go from building to building.
Grover shuddered. When they could just walk in the sunlight with nature? Repulsive.
Our rusty metal box rattled and creaked. Whatever was below would definitely hear us coming, especially if they had ears the size of beach towels. After perhaps 50 feet, the elevator shuddered to a stop. Before us stretched a cement corridor, perfectly square and boring, lit by weak blue fluorescence.
Doesn't seem so scary, said Meg.
Just wait, Piper said. The fun stuff is up ahead.
Grover fluttered his hands half-heartedly. Yay!
The square corridor opened into a larger round tunnel, its ceiling lined with ducts and pipes. The walls were so heavily tagged they might have been an undiscovered Jackson Pollock masterpiece. Empty cans, dirty clothes, and mildewed sleeping bags littered the floor, filling the air with the unmistakable odor of a homeless camp, sweat, urine, and utter despair. None of us spoke. I tried to breathe as little as possible until we emerged into an even larger tunnel, this one lined with rusty train tracks. Along the walls, pitted metal signs read, High Voltage, No Entry, and This Way Out. Railroad gravel crunched under our feet. Rats scurried along the tracks, chittering at Grover as they passed.
Rats, he whispered, are so rude.
After 100 yards, Piper led us into a side hallway, this one tiled in linoleum. Half-burned-out banks of fluorescence flickered overhead. In the distance, barely visible in the dim light, two figures were slumped together on the floor. I assumed they were homeless people until Meg froze.
Are those dryads?
Grover yelped in alarm.
Agave? Moneymaker?
He sprinted forward, the rest of us following at his heels. Agave was an enormous nature spirit, worthy of her plant. Standing, she would have been at least 7 feet tall, with blue-gray skin, long limbs, and serrated hair that must have been literally murdered to shampoo. Around her neck, her wrists, and her ankles, she wore spiked bands, just in case anyone tried to intrude on her personal space. Kneeling next to her friend, Agave didn't look too bad until she turned, revealing her burns. The left side of her face was a mass of charred tissue and glistening sap. Her left arm was nothing but a desiccated brown curl.
Grover, she rasped. Help, Moneymaker. Please.
He knelt next to the stricken dryad. I'd never heard of a moneymaker plant before, but I could see how she got her name. Her hair was a thick cluster of plaited discs, like green quarters. Her dress was made of the same stuff, so she appeared to be clad in a shower of chlorophyll coinage. Her face might have once been beautiful, but now it was shriveled, like a week-old party balloon. From the knees down, her legs were gone, burned away. She tried to focus on us, but her eyes were opaque green. When she moved, jade coins dropped from her hair and dress.
Grover's here.
She sounded like she was breathing a mixture of cyanide gas and metal filings.
Grover, we got so close.
The satyr's lower lip trembled. His eyes rimmed with tears.
What happened? How?
Down there, said Agave.
Flames.
She just came out of nowhere. Magic.
She began coughing up sap. Piper peered warily down the corridor.
I'm going to scout ahead. Be right back. I do not want to be caught by surprise.
She dashed off down the hall. Agave tried to speak again, but fell over sideways. Somehow Meg caught her and propped her up without getting impaled. She touched the dryad's shoulder, muttering under her breath,
Grow, grow, grow.
Cracks began to mend in Agave's charred face. Her breathing eased. Then Meg turned to Moneymaker. She placed her hand on the dryad's chest, then recoiled as more jade petals shook loose.
I can't do much for her down here, Meg said. They both need water and sunlight. Right now.
I'll get them to the surface, Grover said.
I'll help, Meg said.
No.
Grover!
No!
His voice cracked.
Once I'm outside, I can heal them as well as you can. This is my search party. Here are my orders. It's my responsibility to help them. Besides, your quest is down here with Apollo. You really want him going on without you?
I thought this was an excellent point. I would need Meg's help. Then I noticed the way they were both looking at me. As if they doubted my abilities, my courage, my capacity to finish this quest without a 12-year-old girl holding my hand. They were right, of course, but that made it no less embarrassing. I cleared my throat.
Well, I'm sure if I had to.
Meg and Grover had already lost interest in me. As if my feelings were not their primary concern.
I know. I couldn't believe it either.
Together they helped Agave to her feet.
I'm fine,
Agave insisted, tottering dangerously.
I can walk. Just get Moneymaker.
Gently, Grover picked her up.
Careful,
Meg warned. Don't shake her or she'll lose all her petals. Don't shake Moneymaker, Grover said. Got it. Good luck. Grover hurried into the darkness with the two dryads, just as Piper returned.
Where are they going?
She asked. Meg explained. Piper's frown deepened.
I hope they get out okay. If that guard wakes up.
She let the thought expire.
Anyway, we'd better keep going. Stay alert. Heads on a swivel.
Short of injecting myself with pure caffeine and electrifying my underwear, I wasn't sure how I could possibly be more alert or swivel-headed. But Meg and I followed Piper down the grim fluorescent hall. Another 30 yards, and the corridor opened into a vast space that looked like... Wait, I said. Is this an underground parking garage? It certainly seemed so, except for the complete absence of cars. Stretching into the darkness, the polished cement floor was painted with yellow directional arrows and rows of empty grid spaces. Lines of square pillars supported the ceiling 20 feet above. Posted on some of them were signs like, Honk, Exit, Yield to Left. In a car-crazy town like L.A., it seemed odd that anyone would abandon a usable parking garage. Then again, I suppose street meters sounded pretty good when your other option was a creepy maze frequented by taggers, dryad search parties, and government workers.
This is the place, Piper said, where Jason and I got separated.
The smell of sulfur was stronger here, mixed with a sweeter fragrance, like cloves and honey. It made me edgy, reminding me of something I couldn't quite place. Something dangerous. I resisted the urge to run. Meg wrinkled her nose.
Pee, you!
Yeah, Piper agreed. That smell was here last time.
I thought it meant...
She shook her head. Anyway, right about here, a wall of flames came roaring out of nowhere. Jason ran right, I ran left. I'm telling you, that heat seemed malevolent. It was the most intense fire I've ever felt, and I fought Enceladus. I shivered, remembering that giant's fiery breath. We used to send him boxes of chewable antacids for Saturnalia, just to make him mad. And after you and Jason got separated? I asked. Piper moved to the nearest pillar. She ran her hand along the letters of a yield sign.
I tried to find him, of course, but he just disappeared.
I searched for a long time. I was pretty freaked out. I wasn't going to lose another... She hesitated, but I understood. She had already suffered the loss of Leo Valdez, who until recently she had assumed dead. She wasn't going to lose another friend. Anyway, she said, I started smelling that fragrance. That kind of clove scent?
It's distinctive, I agreed.
Yucky, Meg corrected.
It started to get really strong, Piper said. I'll be honest, I got scared. Alone in the dark, I panicked. I left.
She grimaced.
Not very heroic, I know.
I wasn't going to criticize, given the fact that my knees were presently knocking together the Morse code message, run away.
Jason showed up later, Piper said. Simply walked out of the exit.
He wouldn't talk about what had happened. He just said going back in the maze wouldn't accomplish anything. The answers were elsewhere. He said he wanted to look into some ideas and get back to me.
She shrugged.
That was 2 weeks ago. I'm still waiting. He found the oracle, I guessed. That's what I'm wondering. Maybe if we go that way, Piper pointed to the right, we'll find out.
None of us moved. None of us yelled hooray and skipped merrily into the sulfur-infused darkness. My thoughts spun so rapidly, I wondered if my head actually was on a swivel. Malevolent heat, as if it had a personality. The nickname of the Emperor, Neos Helios, the new sun. Caligula's bid to brand himself as a living god. Something Navius Macro had said. I just hope there's enough of you left for the Emperor's magical friend to work with. And that fragrance, clove and honey, like an ancient perfume combined with sulfur. Agave said she just came out of nowhere, I recalled. Piper's hand tightened on the hilt of her dagger.
I was hoping I misheard that. Or maybe by she meant moneymaker.
Hey, Meg said. Listen.
It was difficult over the loud swiveling of my head and the electricity crackling in my underwear, but finally I heard it. The clatter of wood and metal, echoing in the darkness, and the hiss and scrape of large creatures moving at a fast pace.
Piper, I said, what did that perfume remind you of? Why did it scare you?
Her eyes now looked as electric blue as her harpy feather.
An old enemy. Somebody my mom warned me I would see again someday. But she couldn't possibly be
a sorceress, I guessed.
Guys?
Meg interrupted.
Yeah.
Piper's voice turned cold and heavy, as if she was just realizing how much trouble we were actually in.
A sorceress from Colchis, I said. A grandchild of Helios who drove a chariot.
Pulled by dragons.
Piper said.
Guys, Meg said, more urgently. We need to hide.
Too late, of course.
The chariot rattled around the corner, pulled by twin golden dragons that spewed yellow fumes from their nostrils like sulfur-fueled locomotives. The driver had not changed since I'd last seen her, a few thousand years ago. She was still dark-haired and regal, her black silk dress rippling around her. Piper pulled her knife. She stepped into view. Meg followed her lead, summoning her swords and standing shoulder to shoulder with the daughter of Aphrodite.
I foolishly stood at their side.
Medea.
Piper spat out the word with as much venom and force as she would a dart from her blowgun. The sorceress pulled the reins, bringing her chariot to a halt. Under different circumstances, I might have enjoyed the surprised look on her face, but it didn't last long.
Medea laughed with genuine pleasure.
Piper McLean, you darling girl.
She turned her dark, rapacious gaze on me.
This is Apollo, I take it?
Ah, you've saved me so much time and trouble.
And after we're done, Piper, you'll make a lovely snack for my dragons.
Chapter 16. Let's charm speak battle. You are ugly and you suck. The end.
Do I win?
Sun dragons. I hate them. And I was a sun god. As dragons go, they aren't particularly large. With a little lubrication and muscle, you can stuff one inside a mortal recreational vehicle.
And I have done so.
You should have seen the look on Hephaestus's face when I asked him to go inside the Winnebago to check the brake pedal.
But what they lack in size, sun dragons make up for in viciousness. Medea's twin pets snarled and snapped, their fangs like porcelain in the fiery kilns of their mouths. Heat rippled off their golden scales. Their wings, folded against their backs, flashed like solar panels. Worst of all were their glowing orange eyes. Piper shoved me, breaking my gaze.
"Don't stare," she warned. "They'll paralyze you."
"I know that," I muttered, though my legs had been in the process of turning to rock. I'd forgotten I wasn't a god anymore. I was no longer immune to little things like sun dragon's eyes and, you know, getting killed. Piper elbowed Meg.
"Hey, you too."
Meg blinked, coming out of her stupor.
"What?"
"They're pretty."
"Thank you, my dear."
Medea's voice turned gentle and soothing.
"We haven't formerly met. I'm Medea, and you're obviously Meg McCaffrey.
I've heard so much about you."
She patted the chariot rail next to her.
"Come up, my darling. You needn't fear me."
"I'm friends with your stepfather. I'll take you to him."
Meg frowned, confused. The points of her swords dipped.
"What?"
"She's charm-speaking." Piper's voice hit me like a glass of ice water in the face.
"Meg, don't listen to her. Apollo, you neither."
Medea sighed.
"Really, Piper McLean?
Are we going to have another charm-speak battle?"
"No need,"
Piper said. "I just win again." Medea curled her lip in a good imitation of her sun dragon's snarls.
"Meg belongs with her stepfather."
She swept a hand toward me as if pushing away some trash.
"Not with this sorry excuse for a god."
"Hey,"
I protested.
"If I had my powers..."
"But you don't," Medea said.
"Look at yourself, Apollo. Look what your father has done to you." "Not to worry, though.
Your misery is at an end.
I'll squeeze out whatever power is left and put it to good use."
Meg's knuckles turned white on the grips of her swords.
"What does she mean?"
she muttered.
"Hey, magic lady! What do you mean?"
The sorceress smiled. She no longer wore the crown of her birthright as Princess of Colchis, but at her throat, a golden pendant still gleamed. The crossed torches of Hecate.
"Shall I tell her, Apollo, or should you?"
"Surely you know why I've brought you here."
Why she had brought me here. As if each step I'd taken since climbing out of that dumpster in Manhattan had been preordained, orchestrated by her. The problem was, I found that entirely plausible. This sorceress had destroyed kingdoms. She had betrayed her own father by helping the original Jason steal the Golden Fleece. She had killed her own brother and chopped him to bits. She had murdered her own children. She was the most brutal and power-hungry of Hecate's followers, and also the most formidable. Not only that, but she was a demigod of ancient blood, the granddaughter of Helios himself, former Titan of the Sun. Which meant... it all came to me at once. A realization so horrible my knees buckled.
"Apollo!"
Piper barked. "Get up!" I tried. I really did. My limbs would not cooperate. I hunched over on all fours and exhaled an undignified moan of pain and terror. I heard a clap, clap, clap,
and wondered if the moorings that anchored my mind to my mortal skull had finally snapped. Then I realized Medea was giving me a polite round of applause.
"There it is," she chuckled. "It took you a while,
but even your slow brain got there eventually."
Meg grabbed my arm.
"You're not giving in, Apollo," she ordered. "Tell me what's going on."
She hauled me to my feet. I tried to form words, to comply with her demand for an explanation. I made the mistake of looking at Medea, whose eyes were as transfixing as her dragon's. In her face, I saw the vicious glee and bright violence of Helios, her grandfather, as he had been in his glory days, before he faded into oblivion. Before I took his place as master of the Sun Chariot. I remembered how the Emperor Caligula had died. He'd been on the verge of leaving Rome, planning to sail to Egypt and make a new capital there, in a land where people understood about living gods. He had meant to make himself a living god. Neos Helios, the new sun. Not just in name, but literally. That's why his praetors were so anxious to kill him on the evening before he left the city. "What's his endgame?" Grover had asked. My satyr's spiritual advisor had been on the right track. "Caligula's always had the same goal," I croaked. "He wants to be the center of creation, the new god of the sun. He wants to supplant me, the way I supplanted Helios." Medea smiled. "And it really couldn't happen to a nicer god." Piper shifted.
"What do you mean, supplant?"
"Replace,"
Medea said, then began counting on her fingers as if giving cooking tips on daytime television.
"First, I extract every bit of Apollo's immortal essence,
which isn't much at the moment, so that won't take long.
Then I'll add his essence to what I already have cooking, the leftover power of my dearly departed grandfather." "Helios," I said. "The flames in the maze. I recognized his anger."
"Well, Grandpa's a bit cranky," Medea shrugged. "That happens when your life force fades to practically nothing, then your granddaughter summons you back a little at a time until you're a lovely raging firestorm."
"I wish you could suffer as Helios has suffered, howling for millennia in a state of semi-consciousness, just aware enough of what you've lost to feel the pain and resentment. But alas, we don't have that much time. Caligula is anxious.
I'll take what's left of you and Helios, invest that power in my friend the Emperor, and voila, a new god of the sun."
Meg grunted. "That's dumb," she said, as if Medea had suggested a new rule for hide-and-seek. "You can't do that. You can't just destroy a god and make a new one."
Medea didn't bother answering. I knew that what she described was entirely possible. The emperors of Rome had made themselves semi-divine simply by instituting worship among the populace. Over the centuries, several mortals had made themselves gods, or were promoted to godhood by the Olympians. My father Zeus had made Ganymede an immortal simply because he was cute and knew how to serve wine. As for destroying gods, most of the Titans had been slain or banished thousands of years ago, and I was standing here now, a mere mortal, stripped of all godliness for the third time simply because Daddy wanted to teach me a lesson. For a sorceress of Medea's power, such magic was within reach, provided her victims were weak enough to be overcome, such as the remnants of a long-fated Titan, or a 16-year-old fool named Lester who had strolled right into her trap.
"You would destroy your own grandfather?" I asked.
Medea shrugged.
Why not?
You gods are all family, but you're constantly trying to kill each other. I hate it when evil sorceresses have a point. Medea extended her hand toward Meg.
Now, my dear, hop up here with me. Your place is with Nero. All will be forgiven. I promise.
Charm speak flowed through her words like aloe vera's gel. Slimy and cold, but somehow soothing. I didn't see how Meg could possibly resist. Her past, her stepfather, especially the beast, they were never far from her mind.
Meg,
Piper countered, don't let either of us tell you what to do.
Make up your own mind.
Bless Piper's intuition, appealing to Meg's stubborn streak. And bless Meg's willful, weed-covered little heart. She interposed herself between me and Medea.
Apollo's my dumb servant. You can't have him.
The sorceress sighed. I appreciate your courage, dear.
Nero told me you were special. But my patience has limits.
Shall I give you a taste of what you are dealing with?
Medea lashed her reins, and the dragons charged. Chapter 17. Phil and Don are dead. Bye-bye, love and happiness. Hello, headlessness. I enjoy running people over in a chariot as much as the next deity, but I did not like the idea of being the guy run over. As the dragons barreled toward us, Meg stood her ground, which was either admirable or suicidal. I tried to decide whether to cower behind her or leap out of the way. Both options less admirable, but also less suicidal. When the choice became irrelevant. Piper threw her dagger, impaling the left dragon's eye. Left dragon shrieked in pain, pushed against right dragon, and sent the chariot veering off course. Medea barreled past us, just out of reach of Meg's swords, and disappeared into the darkness while screaming insults at her pets in ancient Colchian, a language no longer spoken, but which featured 27 different words for kill and not a single way to say Apollo rocks. I hated the Colchians.
You guys okay? Piper asked.
The tip of her nose was sunburn red. The harpy feather smoldered in her hair. Such things happen during close encounters with superheated lizards.
Fine, Meg grumbled. I didn't even get to stab anything.
I gestured at Piper's empty knife sheath. Nice shot.
Yeah. Now if I only had more daggers. Guess I'm back to using blowgun darts.
Meg shook her head.
Against those dragons? Did you see their armored hides? I'll take them with my swords.
In the distance, Medea continued yelling, trying to get her beasts under control. The harsh creak of wheels told me the chariot was turning for another pass.
Meg,
I said, it'll only take Medea one charm spoken word to defeat you. If she says stumble at the right moment? Meg glowered at me, as if it were my fault the sorceress could charm speak.
Can we shut up, magic lady, somehow?
It would be easier to cover your ears, I suggested. Meg retracted her blades. She rummaged through her supplies while the rumble of the chariot's wheels got faster and closer.
Hurry, I said.
Meg ripped open a pack of seeds. She sprinkled some in each of her ear canals, then pinched her nose and exhaled. Tufts of bluebonnets sprouted from her ears.
That's interesting, Piper said.
What?
Meg shouted. Piper shook her head. Never mind. Meg offered us bluebonnet seeds. We both declined.
Piper, I guessed, was naturally resistant to other charm speakers. As for